Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Today, I have a very interesting interview for you. My guest this week is a gentleman named Marty Klein, who's led a long and very interesting life. And along the way, he discovered yoga. And then he decided to create an instructional audio program called Beginning Yoga for the Blind. We'll talk about that and learn a little more about Marty and some of his adventures in just a few minutes. But first, I would like to thank all of you who take the time to send me email, comments, questions. Thankfully, there haven't been any criticisms yet. I'm expecting a few, but that's just all part of life. Really appreciate hearing from you. And I'd like to say, and I'm very excited to say this, that our last show, the show on food allergies and sensitivities, generated nearly as many emails as the five previous shows combined. Very excited about that. It tells me two things. One, that our listenership is growing, which is always a good thing. And two, that we were focusing on a subject that was of particular importance and interest to many of you. Based on that, I will make every effort to get more good nutrition information out there for you in future shows. I'd like to address a couple of the emails I received. One was the perennial question I've heard hundreds, possibly thousands of times in my 35 years in the fitness industry, which is the best diet? Well, here's the thing. The best diet is the one that you can actually stick to. It's just that simple. We could take you into a lab, do all kinds of blood work, do all the scientific testing to measure your BMI, bone density, blood sugar, determine your optimum calories, optimum carbohydrates, fats, proteins, everything in its most perfect form. And if you couldn't follow that diet, it wouldn't mean anything. You have to find an eating plan that you can stick to without it being a torture, without it being traumatic, without it being the end of the world. And no, I'm not talking about the ice cream diet or the beer diet, guys. I'm trying to be realistic here. Just as an example, I function extremely well on low-carb diets. Paleo, Atkins, that type of eating plan works great for me because I love meat. I love fish. I love chicken. I love salads. I can eat tons and tons of kale and broccoli and asparagus. And I don't really care that much for pasta and bread and potatoes. I mean, once in a while I do enjoy them. But it's not a hardship for me to say no bread, no pasta, no potatoes. Have a steak, have a chicken breast, have some eggs, have a salad. It's easy for me to stick to. And it's not because I'm all that disciplined. It's because it's comfortable for me. So you have to find an eating plan that's within realistic boundaries, that's going to cause you to eventually achieve the results you want, whether they're added muscle or fat loss. But it has to be a plan that you can stick to and that's not going to fall apart when you have a bad day. That was a great non-answer, I realize, but there is no one answer for that. There's no cookie cutter answer. It's just like, which is the best exercise program? Again, it's the one that you enjoy doing. If I tell you kettlebells are it and you don't like kettlebells, then you're going to figure, well, then what's the point? If I tell you strength training is it, no, I don't like that. You got to find what you enjoy because the whole idea, exercise and fitness needs to be fun. This is recreation. This is for your benefit. And if you view it as drudgery, you're not going to get the most benefit. Like I've said in the past, I don't care what you do as long as you're doing something, whether it's running or rowing or swimming or cycling. It doesn't matter. We're all different. We all have to find what works for us. Now I'd like to address one other email I received. It was from a gentleman named Ron, who, as it turns out, lives right up the highway from me, about 100 miles north in Port St. Lucie. Ron and I have a few things in common. We're both gym rats. We're both in our early 50s. And he said he's a power lifter. And he made a comment in his email to me that really made me very happy. It's a statement I've made in the past, and he just reinforced it. I know a lot of you out there are hesitant to go into a commercial gym. You're unsure whether you're going to get support, whether you're going to get help, whether you're going to feel comfortable. And I've said in the past, take it to heart. If you're thinking about joining a gym and you're a little intimidated, just go do it. And now let's get to our guest today, Marty Klein, right after this short break.
Where have you been? You've left me hanging on three lunch dates.
Nice to see you too.
Well, yeah, but question stands. Where have you been?
You miss me that much?
Enough to be curious.
You really want to know?
I do.
I've been trying to get through this semester. But I just went to the bookstore, got a whole bunch of books, scanned them, and my OCR software, I found out when I ran it this past day, is out of date. Screen reader is out of date. Windows is out of date. Office, I thought I updated. I'm so broke, I can't even, pay attention.
Which is why you've left me in the lynch. Fair enough.
Well, I'm sorry. But I finally decided, I gotta step away from my stuff, because if I don't, I'm gonna go insane.
I think I can help you put some sanity back into your stuff, though.
Promise?
Promise. Have you heard of a company called Ceratec?
No, I don't think so. Who are they?
Ceratec's a pretty cool company that makes some pretty awesome and economical AT software.
Oh?
Yeah, like their Accessibility Anywhere package comes to mind.
Oh, what's in that?
Well, you've got some scanning software, a screen reader, and a pretty cool little multimedia program called SamNet.
Really?
Yeah.
So, how much are we talking for that?
Well, all that's $21.95 per month or $240 a year.
$21.95 is less than the cost of a movie date these days. wink, nudge, nudge.
See, it's funny you bring up the subject of movies, because SamNet has one of the fastest growing collections of described movies and TV programs out there.
Hey, that's cool. So where can I get this?
You can go to ceratec.com/accessibilityanywhere, download the trial, and probably get hooked.
I just might, actually. ceratec.com/accessibilityanywhere. Okay, I think I can remember that.
Cool.
Hey, are you hungry?
Starving.
Well, since you did just tell me all about Ceratec and probably save me a whole bunch of money, I can try your little balanced thing and see if you want to go and get something to eat. I'll treat.
You're on.
Ceratec, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
My guest today, as I mentioned at the top of the program, has written three books, has led a very interesting life, and created the Blind Yoga audio program, and we'll get with him right now. Welcome today, Marty Klein.
Thanks for having me, Bill. I appreciate being here.
It's a pleasure, Marty. Now, you've definitely had a long and interesting life, and let's just do the short form of growing up in Brooklyn and your background in sports as a sighted person.
Okay, well, born and raised in Brooklyn, had normal 20/20 vision growing up. Was really into any kind of athletic stuff, running, catching balls. I was into balls, playing balls, any kind of ball, basically. Softball, stickball, hardball, basketball, football, you name it, I was playing it. And then I got into pocket billiards, which was where I really took off, because I found out that I was pretty gifted for the game, plus I had an intelligence that was able to really think bigger picture about that game, and I got really good at that game.
So it sounds like you pretty much grew up on the street playing and enjoying life, and ended up in the, pool hall is not the nicest phrase, but that's pretty much what most people would know him as. And when you say the intelligence, you're talking about the ability to look at the table and think ahead? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, and I read a couple of books on pocket billiards, Willie Moscone and a couple other guys who wrote books, and I wanted to include my intelligence in playing the game. It wasn't just about see the ball, hit the ball, get the ball in the hole. It was something more than that. And it was a place where I could use my intellect to excel. So I did that, got really good at it.
Okay, well, you've mentioned your intelligence and your intellect. So what kind of a student were you?
I was put in a special program when I was in the fifth and sixth grades in Brooklyn. It was the first time they experimented with putting smart kids in a class to see how they would excel. Intellectually gifted children, it was called. And it was a bit of a stigma because obviously we all knew we were smart. I think we carried an arrogance about that and a confidence throughout life, but it kind of isolated us a little bit. I ended up skipping a grade, skipped the eighth grade, went to a Brooklyn Tech High School, which is a pretty, you know, high school for smart guys. And, you know, all throughout my childhood, I had an idea that I could use my intelligence to figure out how to problem solve anything, basically.
It's interesting that you're making the point there that being superior intelligence-wise can create as many problems, probably growing up and the isolation and so forth, as having a disability or being one of the quote-unquote slower kids could.
No question about it. When I went to college, I ended up going to University of Miami, and 2 days after I turned 17, I found myself in college, 1,500 miles away from my home in Brooklyn. And although I was pretty smart and I knew how to play pocket billiards and gamble, because I learned that in Brooklyn, I still felt emotionally pretty out of sorts because everybody there was a couple years older than me, and I was just a kid, basically. But that's the way it went for me.
We're talking about, I guess, like the early to mid-60s at this point, and yeah, finding yourself, as you say, 1,500 miles away from your friends, your family, and totally isolated in an area where everybody else can drink and you can't, and it had to be kind of overwhelming at first.
It was overwhelming, but again, my place I found my grounding, my stability, was the student union pool hall. I knew how to play pool, and I ended up making a lot of friends in the pool room, so at school. And I played a lot, and I got really good. So that was my home away from home.
Okay, so that was kind of like your common ground, even with people that were older than you, and that was like your door opener, your icebreaker to establish friendships.
Yes. Yep, very much so.
Did you complete a degree at U of M?
No, I went for about 3 semesters. I really didn't like school. I was much more into going to the racetrack and to High Line and to the dog track and to be gambling with all my gambling buddies. And during the third semester, I decided to drop out and go to join the Air Force. And that was 1967 that I did that.
You were in college, so were you exempt from the draft at that point? So was going into the Air Force a choice, or were you drafted?
It was a choice. They were just starting the lottery. And the lottery meant, like, if they chose your birthday within the first 100 pulls out of the lottery cap, you were probably going to go to Vietnam. And I didn't want to go to Vietnam at all. So I figured, instead of messing around with the lottery, let me enlist in the Air Force, and that way I'll have a little bit of control, because if I was going to be drafted by the Army, I was going. And I didn't want to deal with it at all. So I decided to go into the Air Force. And along with the Air Force, it turned out I went into basic training. I did fine, you know, because I was in pretty good shape. But then I went to weather school. They sent me to weather school, and I always loved weather as a kid. So I was pretty happy going to weather school. And then after that, they stationed me at Homestead Air Force Base, which was like 20 miles south of the University of Miami. So I, you know, couldn't complain at all. I was pretty happy with the way things were going up to that point.
So you got to stay home pretty much now that Miami had become your home.
Yes.
That's a beautiful thing. And you again, showing your intelligence. You went in before they took you, and that gave you the freedom of kind of deciding, well, at least putting some input into deciding where you ended up.
Yes.
Okay. How long did you serve in the Air Force?
Well, I was in the Air Force for 3 years, but what happened is, you know, Homestead Air Force Base was fine because I was working 6 days out of 10 or 9, whatever it was. We had a strange schedule. And then I was hanging out at the University of Miami with my friends until I got orders for Vietnam. And I got a little,
wow.
I got nervous. I got crazy. One thing led to another. I didn't want to go to Vietnam. I had offers to go to Sweden or Canada to go AWOL and escape the craziness, but I couldn't do that. I wasn't raised to do that. So I went to a few doctors at the hospital on the base, and the eye doctor found something wrong with me. So I was pretty happy about that initially, because it was keeping me at it from going to Vietnam.
Well, They say bad things for, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Finding the good in a bad situation.
Yeah.
And it kept you from Vietnam, but it also had a pretty profound change on your life ultimately.
Yeah, I had no idea that I had any real concern about my eyes. I was playing pocket billiards 5 hours a day and driving and doing all kinds of things that most people with normal vision do. So when they told me I had a problem with my eyes, I didn't think much about it, but I was pretty devastated in the next couple of years when it turned out they ended up losing my vision completely.
Well, because people invariably want to know, what was the nature of your eye condition?
Well, the technical terms was bilateral anterior uveitis, secondary glaucoma, minimal but progressive cataracts. And that sounded like a lot of gobbledygook to me, but basically it was keeping me out of Vietnam, so I was pretty happy about it. But I ended up losing my vision mostly from the glaucoma.
Okay, that sucks, but kept you from Nam, kept you from getting killed, potentially.
It kept me from going to Vietnam, and every day that I'm alive without sight, I am so much at peace that I ended up losing my vision, but didn't have to deal with war, didn't have to try to help kill people, didn't have to worry about being killed. War is crazy.
You probably realistically, looking at the big picture, got the better end of the deal.
I am not complaining 1 minute.
Doesn't sound from our conversations that we've had in the past like you've let it slow you down a great deal.
Well, in fact, you know, I did go through, I guess, about 5 to 7 years of reclaiming my life, my identity, because now, you know, once I lost my sight, I was a different person. But my life without sight has been so much better than my life ever was when I had sight. And that's the hardest people for sighted people to really wrap their brains around. It's true.
Well, let's go into that in a little more detail right after we take a break for a word from our sponsor.
Hey guys, this is AZ inviting you to check out the latest addition to the Serotalk Podcast Network, The Rundown. Coming to you straight from the sports desk, we're going to cover all the headlines in the sports world. From the MVP chase in the NBA, all the free agent changes in the NFL, and all the drama in the WWE, we got you covered. Join us each and every week for The Rundown here on the Serotalk Podcast Network.
Okay, and we're back with Marty Klein. And so after you did lose your vision, obviously you were no longer in the Air Force. What did you do with your life?
Well,
that's a pretty broad question, but
I moved back to my home in Brooklyn, and I went to Long Island University for 2 semesters, community college in New York, in Brooklyn. But I was in the process of losing my sight at that point. I was pretty miserable. I decided to visit a couple of friends of mine in Miami, met a woman. We fell in love, and I moved from Brooklyn to Miami to be with her and be out of the gloomy Northeast and into the warmer South Florida weather, which I knew and loved. So it seemed like a good move for me. It was a pretty rocky relationship, but it did get me out of a tough situation and put me into a more friendly environment. My South Florida friends were down there too, so that was okay.
So you had a lot of support around you down here.
Not support around being a person without sight or losing vision, but a support from my gambling friends, my sports buddies, you know. And as I lost more and more vision, they didn't quite know what to do with me or how to be with me, and I didn't know how to really teach them at that point. So there was pretty awkward times there. But I stayed with Ellen for about 7 years, and you know, we moved around. I lived in Albuquerque for a while, New Mexico, moved back to New York, and eventually settled into Woodstock, New York, where I still happen to be living right now.
Okay. Now, that's a traumatic thing for your friends and your family. They don't quite know how to deal with it. I'm sure the crowd thinned out, but I'm sure you kept a few friends through that managed to deal with it and get through it. It's hard for people. They mean well, but they don't really know what to do because it's new to you and you don't really know how to teach them either.
That's right. That's how it was in the beginning. Very difficult. Well, I think I'll share one story for you. The depth of my despair around losing my vision was one time I used to be a pretty good bowler. You know, I told you that I had a couple of trophies. I went bowling with some of my friends down at the university, and I bowled an 82. And for somebody who used to average 165, it was pretty devastating. And it was all about not being able to see. I was real quiet. We got home. I ran into the house and, you know, in a fit of anger, grabbed one of my bowling trophies to smash it on the wall because I was so depressed about losing my vision. And the hand of the trophy, I grabbed it so hard that it broke the skin in my hand, and I couldn't even break the trophy, and I had blood pouring out of my hand, and I had to be taken to the emergency room to get stitches in my hand. That was a pretty low moment there in my life.
That's even more frustrating. You want to smash the trophy to release the frustration. You can't even do that.
Yep, end up hurting myself in the process, yeah. Pretty tough.
And the truth, Marty, is that anyone out there who's listening who has gone from having some vision or normal vision or even partial vision like I did to total darkness eventually, nobody out there is going to say, it wasn't a problem, I adjusted to it, and they're not going to be telling the truth.
That's why I'm telling that story.
Exactly. People need to be honest about that. You know, I was always limited vision, but I clung to what vision I had. And when I finally got to the point that I realized, wow, I can't see anything anymore, yeah. I guess I never thought it would really happen.
When I was losing my sight and I was still driving, I feel really fortunate that I stopped driving before I hurt myself or anybody else, because the road got less and less clear. And I used to follow
yellow line?
The lights of the back of the cars in front of me and the yellow lines in front. And it was a dangerous situation. It was an accident waiting to happen. And thank God I didn't have that accident, because I didn't want to ever hurt anybody or myself. So, but that was hard to give up my driver's license too.
And you were only in your 20s. We see that every day with elderly people, especially down here in South Florida, when they've been driving for 50 and 60 years, and they just, it's got to be even more devastating for them.
Yeah.
To give up that bit of independence.
Well, it was pretty tough for me at the time, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Yeah. I'm sure it was. You don't strike me as somebody who would sit and brood for a long time. I'm sure you dealt with the depression and the frustration, but you don't strike me as somebody who would sit and wallow for an extended period of time. I'm sure you did something with your life in that time period.
Yeah.
Did you go back to school? Did you work?
When I moved back to Woodstock, I got involved with some therapy. Transactional analysis was the first thing I got into to help me cope with my situation and, you know, learn a little bit about the human condition, basically. And I started working for an organization called Family of Woodstock, which is a crisis intervention center. And those two things really helped me. And then I ended up divorcing Ellen, my first wife, which was really a great, you know, thing to let go of that chaotic relationship. And eventually moved into my first home by myself with my dog and my cat. And that was pretty monumental for me. I was pretty scared. I didn't know if I could take care of myself as a living alone with my dog and cat as a blind person, but I got a really nice place close to the center of town, and I did fine, and lived there for about 5 years. And my life took off once I realized that I could take care of myself. And I was working at Family every week for a couple of days a week, and I found that a lot of the work at Family was answering phones, people who were in distress, and I found that I could be listening to them well and give them some good feedback on the phone, and didn't even matter if I was blind or not. They could feel my compassion. They could know that I was with them, listening to them, and I was able to really focus completely on being with them when they were in need. And, you know, I ended up working there for 8 years at that organization and moved up the ladder, so to speak, where I, from doing a regular shift on the phone to doing a couple of shifts a week to becoming in charge of a full day, the people on the day, to becoming part-time program coordinator at the organization. So I got pretty involved with Family for 8 years I actually worked there.
And I'm sure all that time you spent on the phone listening to other people made your situation seem a lot better at times.
Yep, no question about it. Plus, I was also, now that I was single, living alone with my dog and cat, and living a, you know, working at family, a lot of people got to know me, and a lot of women got to see me as attractive. And that, to me, was stunning, because once I began to lose my sight, I had no image of myself as anything but a, you know, how we were raised to see blind people, not so sexy and attractive. But I found that I was appealing and attractive to women, which to me was amazing. But it was another one of those moments where I realized that, you know, the blindness did not necessarily take away from my vitality.
You know, it's funny. You and I think, like, in one of the initial emails when we were going back and forth, after you kind of looked at my profile on my website, you made the comment that we had a lot of parallels in our life.
Yes.
One of them being that we're both massage therapists. What you're talking about right now sounds so familiar to me in 1998, getting divorced, getting my first home, which was a condo on Hollywood Beach, living there with my dog,
right,
and being the most popular guy on the beach because I was the guy with the cool dog and they didn't allow dogs on the beach. So yeah, my social life was pretty amazing too. So I completely understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think that one of the funny things about blind people in general is I don't think that in general we see ourselves as attractive, but the fact that we are pretty, it's hard to hide our vulnerability because we're blind. And there's something about that that makes us attractive, because we're not necessarily a threat, but people can see us in a different light.
Maternal instincts.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Maternal instincts. Or there's the, well, he can't drive, so I'll always have a clue where he is.
Yeah, and also, when I was working at family, I found that all these women felt safe with me, and I realized that they were feeling safe with me because I wasn't doing what most guys do with sight. I wasn't leering at them with my fantasies, my sexual fantasies, my lust and all that. I couldn't do that because I couldn't see anymore. Well, it turned out that they felt really safe with me because I wasn't staring at them in those ways.
And obviously, all one more time, the blindness works to Marty's advantage.
That's true.
Sounds like you have worked this to kept you out of Vietnam. It was good for your social life.
Yep.
So far, I don't feel sorry for you, man.
I don't think you're going to feel sorry for me through the whole interview here.
No, you are what people need to decide they want to be like. You obviously haven't let it slow you down. So how did you end up back here in Miami going to massage school from Woodstock?
Well, I actually went to massage school in Gainesville, Florida.
Okay.
To the Florida School of Massage. And I went there because a friend of mine who lived near Woodstock moved to Gainesville and went to the school there. And she thought it was a really good school. So I decided to check out the school. I got my license in Gainesville, Florida. And I was pretty happy about going to massage school.
In what year?
That was 1995. 20 years ago. So it's been a while.
I got you beat by 15 years.
It added a lot of depth to my life going to massage school, because I learned so much about the body. And I always like to touch and be touched, but this gave me a whole new understanding about touch with awareness. And I enjoyed being a massage therapist for a couple of years. I still call myself a massage therapist, but I don't practice anymore, just on my friends.
Okay. You obviously were very physical when you were a kid.
Yes.
In all your sports. And once you lost your vision, did you still, and you got past the depression, were you still exercising in some way?
Yeah, I was always trying to do some cross-country skiing and going for long walks up the mountains in Woodstock, and swimming whenever I could get into a pool or go to visit my friends in South Florida. So I did my best to stay pretty active, but, you know, I got into playing guitar too a little bit. That's a little, you know, the guitar ended up going toward other instruments, so it was a segue for me. I did get into drums. I play drums today, and it's another good form of exercise too.
It's also a good form of a meditation of sorts.
Yeah.
You get into your own little world. You obviously stayed physically active. You got past the hurdles, walking, cross-country skiing, And then somewhere in there, you discovered yoga. What drew you to yoga?
A friend of mine wanted to teach me yoga, and he was a nice guy, and I thought I'd learn a little bit of, I didn't know if I would like it. And he showed me the basics of yoga around 1986. I thought it was interesting, and I stayed with it for, 6 months, and then kind of dropped it. But in 1996, somewhere around that, 96, yeah, my new partner, who was, and then I had moved to Tallahassee, and got together with this woman in Tallahassee, and she was into yoga and became a yoga teacher. And I wanted to, I was always in her classes, and I started liking yoga a lot. And we went to a couple of yoga workshops together, and it became more of an integration in my life on a regular basis once I got together with her.
It seems that people who get into yoga get very deeply into yoga, and it becomes almost a part of their lifestyle.
It's definitely a part of my lifestyle. I do yoga every day, and I go to yoga class once a week here in Woodstock. It really has helped me. You talked about staying active. There are times where I don't get out a lot, but if I can do yoga every day, it's kind of like with you doing weights. I'm sure it's the same thing for me on that yoga mat, and I'm working my body, and I'm also quieting my mind, and it's such a healthy thing for me to do. I love it, and it's going to be with me for the rest of my life for sure.
It's one of those wonderful activities that you can do anywhere at any time.
Yep.
You don't need any special equipment.
I mean,
I know you have the mat, but you don't have to have the mat. You could be doing it on a blanket on the beach.
And I do. In fact, I was in Tulum, Mexico a while back, and this winter, and I was doing some yoga on the beach, and my partner who was with me, after I did my little yoga on the beach, she said some people were watching me, and then they started doing yoga too. It was fun because, years ago, I might have been too shy to do something like that in public. I'd be happy to do it in my house. But now a proud person who does yoga and is proud of that. So I get to do it wherever I want, and I'm happy to be encouraging people to do yoga by practicing in front of the world. So it's a good thing.
Well, actions speak much louder than words. Logical segue here. How did we get from participating with your partner and doing workshops and so on and so forth to the idea of creating the CD set?
My partner at the time, Gretchen was her name, we went to a couple of yoga workshops, and it was pretty clear to me that the teachers who were running the workshops were really good people and they meant well, but they had no idea how to be supportive to a person without sight. And I came out of those workshops so frustrated. So at that point, I really wanted to put together a program for people who are visually impaired to initiate them to yoga, because over the years, I've spoken to a lot of yoga teachers, and I asked them if they have a lot of blind people in their classes, and most of them said they didn't have any. And I thought that there are a lot of blind people in this country, and nobody's doing yoga. It's not a friendly environment. The teachers don't know how to think well about people who are visually impaired. Let me try to put something together that will make it a softer integration for people who are visually impaired who would like to learn yoga. So I put this package together with my partner at the time, Gretchen. It's called Beginning Yoga for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And it's a 5-CD package, and what it does is it doesn't just teach you yoga and the beginning poses and all that, but together we teach people how to be assertive, find a yoga class in your local community, teach the teacher how to think well about a blind person in class, and what to look for. So there's it's a comprehensive package. It's not just about postures and doing yoga. It's about how to integrate yoga in your life and how to go after the classes that are going to make it fun for you to be doing yoga in your local community. And I'm pretty, obviously you can hear my voice, I'm very proud of the product because a lot of people have used it and I think it's made a difference in a lot of people's lives. So I feel good about that.
Well, I've listened to the clips on your website and I enjoyed them. Is it Gretchen's voice that's in the audio clips?
Yeah, she's the one who's the yoga teacher. I'm the blind person who helps visually impaired people think about situations that we find ourselves in when it comes to doing yoga.
Okay. Well, I didn't hear your voice anywhere. I heard all the clips. I think they're just teaching the postures for the most part, the clips that are on your website.
Okay. Well, there's one clip of me talking about how enthusiastic I am about people getting involved with yoga, but that was not part of the... I don't teach the actual postures. She was the teacher of the postures.
She's very clear, very detailed, and she has the ideal voice for teaching yoga.
Right.
I've heard some other audio recordings out there for different types of exercise, and her voice wouldn't be ideal if we were doing a high-energy aerobics class.
No question about that.
It's perfect. It's tranquil, it's peaceful, it's supportive, but it's very calm, which is what yoga is all about, as far as I understand it.
And we took about 2 years to put that program together because there were, she had to get the languaging right, and I wasn't going to accept it unless it was exactly right for people who knew nothing about yoga. So I kept trying to be in that innocent mind when she was talking the languaging that we worked on.
Mm-hmm.
When we worked on it for 2 years until we got it right. So most of the languaging through the postures in the whole package will be very easy for a blind person to understand and follow.
That's a problem with a lot of audio and DVD exercise programs that are out there. They don't bring it down to the lowest common denominator. They don't consider this is someone that has no clue what I'm talking about. We must take it to the absolute beginning. So by doing that, you've made it unintimidating and truly accessible. When did the program first come on the market?
I'm thinking 2007, something around that, 6, 7. I'm not exactly sure. Somewhere around there.
Okay, so you'd been practicing yoga religiously for 8 or 9 years when you started working on putting the program together around 2005, 2006, and
yeah.
It came
yeah, something like
to
that.
The public about 2 years after that. So it's been around for about 8 years.
Something like that, yeah.
So what possessed you, and I was happy to see that you did this, what possessed you to go, let's just make it an audible download and eliminate the CDs and cut the price and save the shipping charges and all that?
Well, I still have a few, you know, I have some CD packages in my house still, the inventory. But, you know, times are changing and technology is like moving forward. And I wanted to be honoring the younger generation who's not wanting to mess around with CD packages and they want to just download something onto their iPhones or their Androids. So I don't know how long it's been, but we got the MP3 downloads happening now, and I would think most people get those these days.
I would think so. A lot of people don't even have a CD or a DVD player anymore. So
Right. You
definitely also are making it more portable that way because, again, we're back to being on the beach and practicing it. And if you've got your iPhone right there, you can be moving along with one of the programs that's on it.
That's right.
In the show notes, of course, we're going to have... Marty's website information, the direct information to contact and order the audio download. Or if you're old school and you still want the CD package, he's got a few of those available still. And in addition to the yoga, our author who didn't particularly like to read became an author with 3 books to his credit. And let's touch on each of those books. They're all on Amazon, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's just kind of touch on the 3 books that you've created. And again, we'll have the titles in the show notes. And if anyone is interested in finding out more about them, they're available on Amazon, I would assume, as a Kindle book.
Yes, we have an e-version, and we also have the books you can get if you want to order the books, too.
Okay. Which was the first book?
Blindsighted, and the subtitle is One Man's Journey from Sight to Insight. And that was basically written and published in 1991. And it was my memoir of, you know, what I went through going from sight to losing my sight and all my, you know, emotions and thoughts around the whole process that I had to deal with. That was my first book.
And I'm guessing you go into a great deal of detail over the anger and the depression and the frustration.
Yeah.
And all the negatives that had to come along with it.
Yes, and what I went through in the medical system, in the hospitals, with the doctors, and I think most people who have read it said it's a page turner because, you know, just going through this story about what happened to this human being and the way that I wrote it seems to keep people engaged. And the book ends in a pretty decent place because I've made the transition and I'm living my life as a blind person. So it's pretty, on some level, inspiring from, you know, for anybody who's gone through losing their vision. It's a nice book to read.
Well, we all, like I touched on before, we all have gone through that anger and that frustration. And it's probably a great book for somebody who may be going through that now, seeing there is a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak.
Exactly, exactly. And let me throw out also, Bill, that it's been recorded on National Library Service. RC39917 is the number. If anybody's interested in getting the cassette form, I'm not sure if they've done anything digitally with it, though.
Well, they're trying to bring everything up to date, but they have so many books on cassette. I'm sure there's still books that are only available on records.
Okay.
And the next book?
Well, the next book is called Emotional Cleansing, The Spiritual Journey Toward a Clear Heart. And I decided to write a book based on all the years I was involved in the counseling world. You know, I told you initially before that I got involved with transactional analysis. I got involved with some other psychological modalities also, and I learned a lot about the mind, the body, the human condition. And Emotional Cleansing is a book which helps people learn about what they might be going through and ways to handle it in healthy ways. So I feel really good about that book. It's kind of a book about the psychological side of things. So, but anybody could read the book and get a lot out of it.
Sounds like it's a book about learning to accept and go from that point on.
Yes, it's more than acceptance, though. It's also a book of empowerment. So anybody who reads this book will learn about reclaiming our connection to our emotional body, which we don't get a lot of support in this world, and knowing how releasing the emotions in a healthy way helps us grow as human beings. It's one thing to accept. It's another thing to realize that we have the power to make changes, you know, in the world for ourselves and for the world, too. So I think, you know, it teaches people about that stuff.
Excellent. Sounds like a very logical extension from all of your counseling work.
Yeah.
And then the final book is back to you and your gambling,
Sounds
like.
Well, it's The Enlightened Gambler, and the subtitle is The Heart and Spirit of the Risk Taker in All of Us. And it's basically a combination of my Brooklyn roots with my spiritual path. It's a fun book, but in between the interesting stories about gambling, there's a lot of wisdom in there too. One of the things I mentioned in the book is that, you know, when we think of gambling, we think of somebody taking money and betting it on a horse or a football game or something, but there's so much more in this world that is a gamble, like going in for surgery or getting into a new relationship or moving or getting a new job. And we don't call those gambles, but they sure are, because when we're making those decisions, we expect it to work out, but we really don't know how things are going to work out. So in a way, we're all, like I say in the book, we're all dancing in the land of uncertainty.
Yeah, what do they say? Nothing is certain other than death and taxes?
That's what they say. That's right.
Yeah, and the only thing that's really certain is death, because I know a lot of people avoid their taxes, but okay, sounds like we have three very interesting books out there.
Yeah, they're good books. I'm happy with them.
As well you should be. I'd like to go into a lot more detail on the books. Unfortunately, we do have some time limitations, so we've talked about the audio program, we've talked about the books, and I know you've got a blog on Facebook, and you're out and about, you've done some other podcasts, and you're definitely not just sitting back and relaxing. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
Sure. I think that for every human being who's alive, whether you're visually impaired, blind, or in a wheelchair, or if you're completely able-bodied, so many people just take life for granted. And if you can get to a place where you realize every day that you wake up that it's a precious thing, this thing we call life, and to honor it, respect it, love it, engage in it as fully as you want to, and know that it's not going to last forever. So it's a special thing, this thing called life. And I guess that's all about my spiritual path, to know that this is a gift, this life, this body, this mind, the spirit that I'm here now, and I may not be able to see, but I sure am alive, I'm vibrant, and I love people, I love life, I get excited about all the possibilities that tomorrow is going to bring. So, you know, taking good care of the body, working out, whether it's weights or yoga or whatever you do to stay in good shape physically, being conscious nutritionally, not putting too much garbage in your body because your body will break down. You know, there's enough obesity and diabetes in this world to know that overdosing of sugar is not the way to go. You know, so there's a lot of stuff out there, and like to just know that life is a precious thing and just enjoy it.
Like they say, you only get one.
That's what they say, and we're still here though, so.
That's true. You touched on one very important point that tells me that you thoroughly enjoy life and you're not obsessive about anything. You said not too much garbage. I'm glad you said that because I don't want anyone out there to think any, whether myself or Marty or anybody else, is trying to tell you you need to be on this absolutely perfect plan because we're not perfect. Enjoy your life, but be reasonable in the abuses you choose to do to yourself.
Yeah. I used to tell people, Bill, that they asked me, what are my credentials? And I would say, I'm a PhD. And they'd say, what's a PhD? And I said, a practicing human being.
You know, I can't add anything to that. So let's just wrap it up right there. We have been talking with Marty Klein of the Blind Yoga Audio Program and so much more. If you want to know about the program, you want to know about his books, check out the show notes. Thank you very much, Marty.
Thank you, Bill, for having me. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Well, if you've ever given any thought to taking up yoga, but don't care for class situations, or were concerned about finding the right instructor that would understand your needs and be able to properly instruct you, or simply prefer doing things on your own in the privacy of your own home, then I'd strongly recommend checking out Marty's program. Beginning Yoga for the Blind. It's available in CD or as an audio download that you can put on your phone, iPad, or whatever mobile device you happen to have. It's clear, it's concise, it's easy to follow, it's easy to understand. And if learning about yoga is your plan, I'd give it a try. And now let's talk about next week's show. My guest next week is known worldwide as the Queen of the Kettlebell Swing. Her name is Tracy Rifkind, and after 41 years of, in her own words, being the chubby girl, she took control of her life and transformed not only her body, but her entire life with the use of one tool, the kettlebell, and a program centered around virtually one exercise, the kettlebell swing. She lost over 100 pounds, totally transformed her body, and totally changed her life. We're not talking about running. We're not talking about living on a treadmill. We're talking about the kettlebell swing. And you will learn a lot from listening to her. You'll be inspired and you'll laugh. And now at 51, she's in even better condition, has, to her credit, several DVDs, as well as one excellent book. And she has dedicated her life to helping others transform their lives like she did. That's Tracy Rifkind, the Queen of the Kettlebell Swing, my guest next week here on the Real World Fitness Podcast. Now, before I say goodbye, I'd like to thank everybody once again for taking the time to listen, as well as thank you for continuing to send me all those wonderful emails. I really appreciate it. Makes me know somebody out there is listening and paying attention. So, hope to see you all soon. This has been Bill. Have a great day. Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources@serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by Audible.com.